This is John J. Miller of National Review Online. Thanks for listening. Our guest is Napoleon Chagnon, author of Noble Savages, My Life Among Two Dangerous Tribes, the Yanomami and the Anthropologists. Nap, who are the Yanomami, and what's so dangerous about them and the Anthropologists?
Well, the Yanomami are one of the remaining isolated large tribes on the border between Brazil and Venezuela. They occupy an area that basically, until I went there, was totally unexplored. And the interesting thing about them, John, was that they were still conducting warfare, inter-village warfare, without any interference from either the country of Venezuela or the country of Brazil, who, for all intents and purposes, didn't even know they were there. There were over 20,000 of them, and they were subdivided into about 250 separate warring villages, but it took me several years of research to determine the size of the tribe and the number of villages in it.
So what's so dangerous about them and the Anthropologists?
Well, the Yanomami are very difficult to live with. I wasn't expecting to see blissful, noble savages flitting through the jungle with scented bodies, but instead I found people who were on the edge 100% of the time, and especially the large villages, and were quite violent. And there were times when they attempted to take my life and kill me. But by contrast to Anthropologists, they're rather timid. If you look at the reaction to my work by especially left-leaning anthropologists, most of them are abhorred by the reports that these are just empirical reports that I made during my 35 years of studying them, and they ganged up on me, so to speak, that is to say, the activists among them.
Now, what was their agenda? Did they just not want to accept that people living close to the state of nature are violent?
Well, there are several components to that history in anthropology, John. One of them goes back to the attempts by the French sociologist Emile Durkheim in about 1890, who tried to separate the study of social facts, which later became sociology, from social psychology, and he laid down a dictum that insisted that any time a social fact was explained in terms and reduced to a biological or psychological fact, you can be sure the explanation is false. And that carried over into anthropology, and this attitude, anti-biology, anti-psychology, anti-evolution, characterized much of the history of anthropology since I became an anthropologist. And the other dimension of this is that many anthropologists today are, not all, but many are activists on behalf of Native peoples. And there are large industrial strength corporations that exist to advocate the rights of Native peoples. And one of them is Survival International, and another one is Cultural Survival. And many of these anthropologists who are after me are competing, being a member of one of these groups or the other. And the best way to compete is to exaggerate and invent the sins of your competitors, like me, who just go about studying and reporting on the Native peoples, and they end up in some kind of race, each trying to portray the villain as the nastiest person on earth and trying to conceal the human defects that people like the Yanomami have. So if you say that they are fighting and have war, you are a villain, because the assumption is that Native peoples are tranquil, pleasant, and live the life of Rousseauian savages.
Well, the title of your book comes from Rousseau, Noble Savages. And he seemed to think that humans in a state of nature, to use your words, are, quote, blissful, nonviolent, altruistic, and non-competitive, unquote. Is that just wrong?
Well, first of all, Rousseau never saw people who were natives. He lived at a time when Europeans had not made discoveries of the sort that would enable informed individuals like missionaries or explorers to describe and live with native peoples who were savage, like North American Indians or Samoans or African peoples south of the Sahara. So he really arrived at his conception of noble savages, and it's a term that he didn't use. It's sometimes translated as the good savage. But neither he nor Hobbes, whose point of view seems to be pitted against Rousseau's, had ever seen or lived with noble savages. And I find it remarkable that anthropologists who spent 200 years doing research on people like this should have arrived at a reasonable image of what the life was like in a state of nature if we could take contemporary primitive peoples as an example. But anthropologists remarkably have opted for the noble savage view.
Is this why we study groups like this? Because they give us insights into human nature?
Well, that's part of the reason, John, but the other reason is anthropology is, or should at least be considered, to be a science, and I'm a scientific anthropologist, and those of us who call ourselves scientists want to discover as much as we can from these remaining pockets of uncontaminated or isolated peoples, just to find out the kinds of social, political, and environmental pressures that were put on people like this when they lived freely in all parts of the world under these circumstances. And so we are, as scientists, attempting to learn more and more about the details. And anthropology today, by those of us who are interested in the scientific approach, is far more detailed and complex than anthropology was, say, when Margaret Mead and her generation were discovering and studying the peoples of, say, the Samoa or North America or any part of the world. They weren't as empirically oriented and specific about things like demography. It turns out that how many people there are in a community is an extremely important variable. And most of the anthropology by my professors and teachers, the generation before me, was done in very unfortunate circumstances where the native peoples that they studied had been beaten up by the U.S. cavalry or decimated by diseases and things of that sort. And so, therefore, a lot of them didn't really have to learn some of the scientific procedures that those of us today who are still trying to find out as much as we can about native peoples are used to doing.
Last question. You began your research in 1964. That's when you wandered into the jungles of Venezuela and Brazil and started working with these people and you spent a lifetime doing it. That was a generation ago. Does the state of nature exist anywhere today? Are there uncontacted tribes or barely contacted tribes still around that we can learn from and study?
Well, we can only learn a certain amount. Most of the remaining native peoples are, in some way or other, very much affected by their existence as subcomponents in large complex industrial states. And that's even true in Papua New Guinea. But when I began my field research, there are only two places left in the world where you could find people like this. One of them was in the Amazon basin and the other was in New Guinea. And since my work began in 1964, there are almost none of these people left. The Yanomami were the last major tribe of people who were living in a state of nature completely oblivious to the fact that a country named Venezuela or a country named Brazil existed.
The author is Napoleon Chagnon. The book is Noble Savages, My Life Among Two Dangerous Tribes, the Yanomami and the Anthropologists. Thanks for listening.